Accession number 9738, Reel 1.
Mr. Hirsch, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Hirsch?
I was born in Sieradz, Poland.
How do you spell that?
S-I-E-R-A-D-Z.
Where is it?
That's not very far from Łódź. 60 kilometers from Łódź.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a tailor.
Was he self-employed?
Self-employed, yes.
Did he have any employees under him?
He had, I think, two people working for him.
Was that family?
Well, one was from outside, and two from the families, in actual fact. My brother and my sister.
What was your education?
In Poland, well, only the basic elementary education till the age of 13, when the war broke out.
What kind of a school was it?
It was a state school in a way, but it was completely Jewish. We call it public school, but here, of course, it's really a state school.
And was your family religious or not?
Very religious, yes.
Were they Orthodox?
Very Orthodox, yes.
So you were brought up in the same way?
That's right.
Did your family have any political interests at all?
None whatsoever, no. We never indulged in any political... in any politics whatsoever, because we thought that was not our business. And we kept purely to our own personal lives and the community, the interest of the community, and that's all. Because we didn't think it was for us to interfere in anything political.
Why not?
Well, because we thought Jewish people living, although we were a large minority in Poland, 10% of the population, we still thought that we should behave ourselves absolutely impeccably. And so we can never be accused of anything untoward. Because there was a lot of anti-Semitism in Poland anyway. And for our own security, we thought it's wiser to keep out of politics as much as possible.
Did your family have any attitude towards Zionism?
Yes, not a great deal, I wouldn't think. I don't think my father was particularly interested one way or the other about this particular subject, although my brother and sister, they were taking an interest there because, as I say, things were leading towards what appeared to be a war, and conditions in Poland were not exactly very happy for us. So we thought it's time to emigrate to Palestine.
Did your father take any practical steps to emigrate?
No. No, his brothers did leave in the late 20s to France, for example, but he would never move. He preferred to stay in Poland.
Did he give any reason?
No, the reason maybe we had a young family and he didn't want to move. He somehow felt this is his place of birth and he wanted to stay there and kept on struggling as best as he could. And we always made a living somehow, although things were not easy.
In view of the attitude of Catholics towards Jews, did you feel loyal to Poland or not?
Yes, we felt very loyal to the country, to Poland, because we felt this was our country of birth, this was our country where we lived in, and we've got to be loyal. It's in our own interest and also, in after all, in gratitude. And in spite of all that, we still got punished.
Can you remember any instances of anti-Semitism that occurred to you?
Many, yes. I was myself on many occasions physically attacked, walking on the pavement, for example. Although I was not very easily recognizable as Jewish, but somehow or other, if I wasn't in company with other boys, they soon recognized me as being Jewish. And I was physically attacked, you know, luckily not badly injured, but I was attacked nevertheless, assaulted, shall we say. And called that a Jew on many occasions.
Who do you think was behind the anti-Semitism?
I think myself, from what little I know, it's partly the church. The church was always preaching anti-Semitism. I remember one particular incident myself. It was a market, open market in our town. And most of the stallholders, I would think, were Jewish. One fine day, a priest arrives on the market and boycotted the market. He said, "Do not buy from Jews." In a matter of minutes, the market was emptied of people, of customers. Of course, as soon as the bishop left, the customers eventually returned. But it only showed you how people were influenced by the church, to what extent they were influenced. And unfortunately, it came from, I presume it was official policy, if a priest arrived in broad daylight on the market to boycott it, it must have been official policy.
Who or what else was behind it?
Possibly it goes back, this anti-Semitism goes back centuries, I would think. And possibly the intelligentsia, they were always preaching anti-Semitism for what motives, I do not fully understand. People who, of course, know more about the history of Poland will know more. But I hazard a guess to say that they were jealous of the Jewish minority. They always wanted to keep them down. And this was one of the reasons for the anti-Semitism.
Do you think any political parties were behind it?
That I don't know. I couldn't very well enlarge upon. I don't know. There were certain governments, of course, in power which were less anti-Semitic than others. That is true. But that much I do not know.
So did you see the activities of any anti-Semitic political parties in your area?
I can't remember sufficiently about that.
What languages did you speak at home?
At home we spoke Polish and Yiddish.
So you were bilingual?
Bilingual, yes.
Now, can you remember the war actually breaking out? What did you actually see of it?
Very vividly. The war broke out in Poland on the 1st of September 1939. That was on a Friday. And as was usual in Poland, the 1st of September is a new school term starts. It's universal, in fact, in Poland. Or it was. And as I was going to wake up, the sirens were going already. Aircraft attacks were taking place. And of course, I was very, very happy about that. I won't have to go to school, and we're going to have a bit longer extended holidays. And it'd be wonderful, you know. It was excitement. It was real excitement. It wasn't something you've seen on a film. It was real. And, of course, being a kid of that age, of 13, not quite 13, to me that was of great excitement. Of course, it didn't take very long. In fact, I would think only about 24 hours of that before I realized this was far more serious than just excitement. And I became almost an old man overnight.
In what way?
Well, I realized the seriousness. I could see the seriousness on our parents' faces and other people's faces. And I realized this was a very, very dangerous thing which is happening now. Of course, bombings were taking place and we were left our hometown, crossing the river Warta. Because we thought that there's going to be very, very strong battles taking place in our town. Because it's a strategic point to cross the river, and we left the town for Zduńska Wola, which is 14 kilometers from Sieradz, across the river, and we stayed in the garden there at our uncle's, who lived in that place, and of course bombings took place all day Saturday and Sunday, and after that of course the bombing stopped, and the Germans eventually walked in. I think Monday they walked in.
What picture did they present?
Well, at first, just like an ordinary army, the first few minutes when they arrived, but very, very soon, they showed their true colors. They became vicious. They used to take hostages. And used to shoot people in the streets and drag them out of bed at night. This was a very irregular occurrence in our town, for example. They used to drag people out of bed at night, in the middle of the night, and just line up against a wall and shoot them. for no apparent reason. The reason they used to give, of course, which was of course a lie, was somebody was shooting at them. A German soldier would walk through the street, shoot in the air, and said the population was shooting at them. And as I say, these people, these innocent people, were dragged out of bed, anybody, and just shot in cold blood. At other times, of course, they would get hold of the population and make them stand for hours on end in the streets, and on the threat of death or whatever, and sometimes they would release them and sometimes they would take some away, just depending on how they felt. They had complete carte blanche. They could do whatever they wanted. It depended a lot, on my opinion, on the particular perversion of the man officer in charge. It was purely enjoyment to them.
So would they shoot civilians who were both Catholics and Jews?
Oh yes, anybody at first, yes, anybody.
So you saw these shootings, did you?
Well, we could see it through the window, and we heard it, and we've seen afterwards, of course, the blood against the walls, and we also knew who died as well.
About how many did you have first-hand experience of these shootings?
I would think perhaps 50-odd people at least.
Just in your town?
Oh, yes, at least. In fact, more I would think, more than 50-odd people. In fact, what they used to do, they used to round up influential people, professional people, solicitors, lawyers, priests, doctors, and they would take them as hostages. This was a usual excuse, and of course these hostages in most cases were executed afterwards. They wanted to denude the population of influential people, so they become leaderless, and they have an easy job to rule this disorganized population.
Did it succeed?
I think it has succeeded to a certain extent, yes.
What about your living standards when the Germans took over?
Well, we had enough food to eat. We didn't have a high standard of living, but we had a reasonable standard of living. Things were difficult in Poland, very difficult for Jewish people, but as much as anybody else. But I think so, perhaps as difficult, if not more so, because Jewish people over the centuries were limited in what sort of professions they could
pursue.
And so what happened was a consequence. Jewish people were always veering towards the artisan jobs, like tailoring, shoemaking, glaziers, and all that sort of thing, which meant that too many people were in those jobs. Consequently, there was too much competition, and living was rather difficult. To make a living was very difficult. Somehow or other, we made a living, because Poland was a poor country on the whole.
Was your father able to continue his business under the Germans?
Under very great difficulty. At very first, we actually were selling clothes and making clothes for Germans as well, for German soldiers. But the German soldiers behaved just the way they wanted. In other words, they were very... some people will pay for the articles they bought, and some would not. And you could do nothing about it, of course. So it just depended on the individual nature of the officer.
What food were you living on at this time?
Well, obviously, the Germans brought in rationing, and it didn't take them very long to put on tremendous restrictions on Jewish people. Jewish people were not allowed to travel. We were all fingerprinted, we issued with papers, and very soon they established a ghetto, which meant that you were extremely restricted, and to make a living was extremely difficult. So you found eventually difficulty in buying even the bit of food ration on offer. Life became, extremely difficult, and they took people. Every so often you would make raids on the ghetto, taking people out and to dig graves for other people who were caught in the street or taken as hostages who were executed, and they had to bury these people. It happened on one occasion, a neighbor of ours, whose own friend was shot, who was a hostage, and he had to bury him. He wasn't quite dead when he buried him, and this friend of his got hold of him by the bottom trouser leg. He says, "How can you do that to me, to bury me alive?" Because the man wasn't dead. The Germans weren't interested. They knew he's not going to come out after he's been covered over the soil. He's going to suffocate anyway. So they were ruthless, absolutely, completely ruthless.
Did you come across any Germans who were humane or kind?
Yes, there were on very few occasions. You could come across some Germans who were a little less cruel, who had a little bit of humanity in them. But they also had to be careful, they had to look over the shoulder. But they could, up to a point, they could get away with it. Because we realized afterwards that the cruelty committed by a lot of these officers was... they were actually exceeding their orders. Because we knew from the average that they didn't have to commit these cruelties. Of course they had orders to liquidate the Jewish people. But I don't think they had orders to commit the greatest cruelty before they murdered us. They didn't have to do that. I remember one occasion when I was working in a camp, in a concentration camp, and a friend of mine, who I was working with, went to a cottage, to a village cottage, to beg for food. And the German civilian foreman asked me, "Where is your friend?" "Oh," I said, "they went to the toilet." So he came back about 10 minutes later. He says, "Where is your friend?" So I told him the same thing. He says, "Well," he says, "it's all right with me, but if some superiors arrive, then he's going to be in trouble." Well, eventually he was caught, actually, my friend. And he was taken away by the Gestapo, and he was given a proper punishment, beaten up. And he wasn't charged with trying to beg for food. The charge was trying to escape. And really, for trying to escape, the first thing a person got was a very severe beating, which left him almost half dead, and then afterwards, hanging. The hanging was carried out in a very legalistic way. The act was read out, paragraph so-and-so promulgated by the Führer, by Hitler in such and such a time, and duly executed. So it only shows you how a dictatorship, a tyranny, can bring in laws which are completely inhuman, and yet, nevertheless, it's still a legalistic system.
So that happened to your friend?
That happened to my friend, yes.
And you witnessed it, did you?
Yes, we had to witness it. We had to witness the beating and we had to witness the execution. All the people in the camp had to stand around and watch all these punishments. So it should be a lesson to any of us. If ever we were going to try, as they said, trying to escape. And of course, in actual fact, what he tried to do is not to escape, just to beg for a little piece of bread.
So which camp was that in?
That was near Poznań. That is that was the western part of Poland.
Do you know the name of the camp?
Otoczno.
How do you spell it?
OTOCZNO.
And do you know when it was?
That was around about 1940.
Now, going back to you being moved into the ghetto in Sieradz,
yes.
You had to move from your own home into the ghetto, did you?
No. The ghetto was established in the area we lived in. Jewish people lived in Poland, in many cases, in certain areas for security reasons, for safety. For example, it was easier to practice your religion, it was you felt secure somehow if you lived in large numbers in a certain area. But of course, when the ghetto was established, they pushed a lot of people into that small quarter. Consequently, we were extremely overcrowded, and living conditions became very, very difficult indeed. Of course, the Germans soon relieved us of that problem as well by having constant deportations. They call it Aussiedlung, which meant resettlement, but what it meant really is annihilation, murder. That's what it meant. And so they were sending people away to different places, different camps, and they usually invariably took people at night.
Did you know what was happening to them?
No, we didn't fully know. We knew people went to camps. But one must understand, and this is something I'm trying to realize now, with hindsight, is when things were very, very bad in the ghetto, the prospects for survival were very poor in the ghetto because of the shootings, the beatings, and the lack of food. So people were thought to themselves, now, at least if we're taken to a camp, to a labor camp, say, they have to give us some food in order to exploit us for their own benefit. So we thought, well, it can't be worse in here, but of course we were wrong. Invariably, it was worse. It was worse. And this was their great deception. The Germans, I think, were tremendous experts at deception. The way they kept on issuing rumors and made us believe that we're going to labor camps, for example, and we'll be all right, that was to keep us quiet and accept our fate in a much more, in an easier way. So it made it easier for them. I remember when I was taken away from home in March 1940, they knocked on the door around about midnight, I think it was, and called my name out, and I had about 2 minutes to get dressed. Didn't even say goodbye to my father or my sister. I just said, my mother, of course, got up to help me take a few things with me, and she also gave me a little piece of bread which she could ill afford, and there I went. And we were pushed into prison overnight, packed in God knows how many people into a small cells. And in the morning, we were taken along to army barracks, and there we were examined by doctors. I don't know what for, because that was the whole thing was a farce, because we were only been taken to concentration camps, only to be tortured and murdered, and that's it. We worked for a short time there. We did very useful work, of course. But nevertheless, the ultimate aim was torture and murder. That was the ultimate. We were taken, and afterwards, after being examined by these doctors, we were taken along to this camp in Otochno. When we arrived on the platform, the first thing, the Gestapo waiting for us, with very big whips, and were beating us and screaming and shouting like worse than animals. And they made us discard everything we had with us. See, they let us take a few things with us. So we were to make us believe that we're just being resettled somewhere, some peaceful place maybe, and we'll need all that. But as soon as we arrived, they made us discard everything. And then we went into the camp. The camp was built on a brandly new built camp in wooden barracks, and which were built on sort of marshland. And they put down sleepers. We can walk on these sleepers, and of course it was difficult to balance yourself on the sleepers. Many people used to fall, and this was another game they enjoyed, the Germans. They would chase us with whips, and so we can fall over into the mud. And as soon as we sometimes got our food ration, say soup, they would chase us, and we spilled the soup, and that was it. That was your meal gone. It was only water soup anyway. And then I remember in the very beginning, in that camp, the very first day, we were building our own fence. You can see how sure the Germans were that we are not able to escape, that we were in that camp that night without a fence. Of course, we were well guarded. All the barracks, doors and windows, everything was well guarded, so we couldn't make any attempt to escape. In fact, they used to come in at night into the barracks and used to beat us. If they heard anybody talking at night, they used to come in and punish us. They call it punishment. They used to beat us. I think the whole thing was to get us completely demoralized so we should get no ideas of escape or uprising. So we become a very pliable, oppressed prisoners, and they can do what they wanted with us.
Did those tactics work?
I think they did work. Two things worked, mainly. One was hunger. When a person is hungry most of the time, he walks about like in a stupor, in delirium, and he's got no energy to do anything. He has got no... The mind doesn't work properly. He can't think. And you become completely demoralized. And also the constant beatings, and that also put you in such a state that you couldn't possibly think. You were always on the defensive rather than thinking how to take action to stand up to them. So from that point of view, it worked. And I remember when I was building this fence, I was carrying... the sleepers, railway sleepers, which were absolutely extremely heavy, lying outside in the winter, right through the winter in the wet. And I was only, as I say, 13 at that time. I was carrying it with an adult, this thing was taller than me, and of course all the weight went on my shoulder. And of course I couldn't do it. So eventually I had to let go. And this foreman, who was a civilian, German ethnic from Czechoslovakia, German civilian. He was about 19, I think, at that time. He came along with a whip, and he beat this fellow like mad, because he thought this fellow was the cause of dropping the sleeper. But in actual fact, it was me. So this fellow protested. He said, "It's not me, it's this young fellow. He's too young, he can't carry the sleeper." He said, "We shall see." So I put this sleeper on my shoulder, and of course I knew what's going to happen. But nevertheless, I had no option. I just couldn't carry it any further. It was just impossible. And when I did that, of course, he beat me all over the face with that whip. And I've still got marks, scars here, for example.
Yes, I can see them.
Yes, from this whip. And I can tell you, a thin whip, when you whip it over your face and your body, it hurts. Anyway, I managed to outpace him. I was still very young. And I managed to save myself that day. I didn't get beaten to death, at least. After that, we eventually were put to more positive work, and that's for building railway lines, connecting the German railway system on a big scale with the Polish railway system. And that railway system was developed always towards the east. And we were building massive jobs, excavating, putting down the railway lines. It was really a highly skilled job. When I look back now, it was amazing that people of our inexperience, we managed to achieve such great tasks. Of course, we had foremen who showed us the way to do it, and we soon learned.